Welcome, Eagles, to another episode of Trad Cat Night Radio. I'm Eric Kajewski, founder and owner of Trad Cat Night, the most viewed and followed traditional Catholic website worldwide, ranked number one in the world as it relates to traditional Catholicism by Alexa, a now top 20,000 website. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for all of your prayers and support over the past 3 years. Certainly couldn't have done it without you. I encourage you all to continue to share these articles and videos that we present here at Trad Cat Night. And if you are an alternative news outlet, please do contact me so we can get something set up to where you can carry our articles and videos. I want to thank Veterans Today for picking up both our articles and videos, and a lot going on in the world. Make sure you're subscribed to Trad Cat Night and click that notification button for all of the latest videos that are coming out. Truly difficult to keep up with all the news, and one of the areas that we definitely cover here at Trad Cat Night is this culture of death that we live in. So obviously we are very pro-life, and we've been covering this pretty extensively here this past month here at Trad Cat Night. And so today's guest, Susan Thayer, we're going to be exposing essentially Planned Parenthood, get a little bit more about her background, her story, what's going on with her currently. But if I can, before I get Susan on the other end, I just wanted to relay some of the latest headlines coming from LifeNews.com. One of the latest scandals coming out of Planned Parenthood, just being reported upon today by Micaiah Bilger, is that Planned Parenthood is now apparently now covering up sex trafficking. So a good article there. Again, get to Life News for all the latest on that. Some positive news. We have possible Trump Supreme Court nominee William Pryor stating within the past few days, Roe is the worst abomination in the history of law. And again, if we were truly a Catholic Christian country, folks, this wouldn't happen. Liberals would have no say. There would be no pro-choice or pro-abortion in this country. And this is something we have to look forward to in the days ahead. Now, one of the questions I will ask Susan here in a little bit is concerning some of her experiences maybe with seeing botched abortions. And we just had recently in Dallas, Texas, a clinic had botched an abortion so badly that the woman couldn't breathe and actually had to be rushed to the hospital. Some other pro-life news, EWTN is going to start a new pro-life weekly show for those interested. And that's something to look forward to on the front of pro-life. And along the pro-life news, too, again, we're seeing this trend in euthanization of patients and the harvesting of organs. And this kind of ties in what we're going to talk about today because, you know, Planned Parenthood is being exposed now, and they are selling body parts. Breitbart just covered an article on this in the past few days, too. So without any further delay, my good friends, let us now hand it over to Susan Thayer, and she is a Planned Parenthood defector out of Iowa. You know, she's been seen on Fox News with Neil Cavuto, EWTN, to name a few, you know, kind of telling her story. And so I want to hand it over to you, Susan, and I guess give us a little bit more, you know, background on yourself and how ultimately you got caught up in Planned Parenthood, and then we can get into maybe some of the things that you saw.
Okay, well, thanks for having me on, Eric. I actually started working at Planned Parenthood in April of 1991. I live in a small rural town in Iowa. Planned Parenthood had been in town since 1985 and had a fairly good reputation as far as providing women's health care. And so it was close to my house. I could ride my bike to work. I knew they had a job opening, and it seemed like a great fit. So when I went for the interview, I remember the regional director asking me what I thought about their surgical services. And honestly, I grew up in a kind of a non-Christian home where we really didn't talk much about things like that. I remember when Roe passed, but didn't really mean much to me. And when she asked me that, what I thought about their surgical services, I was really caught off guard. And I said, well, isn't there like a little heartbeat, you know, in a baby by the time it's a couple months old? I had no idea. And she said, well, it really isn't murder unless the fetus is viable. So we kind of, I guess, agreed to disagree as much as you can during a job interview. And I left there thinking, well, I'm probably not going to get that job. But lo and behold, I did. I was hired as a family planning assistant, and within a very short time, the manager's position opened up, and I applied for that and got that as well, and then ended up working there nearly 18 years.
Now, in terms of, you know, this is, you know, I'm an ex-businessman, Susan, so this is a question I have for you. Maybe you can give us some insight from what you've seen with the time spent with Planned Parenthood. And if I'm not mistaken, you spent 17 years with Planned Parenthood. So, I mean, so you've got, you know, some good history there. Now, what's the turnover rate like in terms of maybe just your everyday worker or management? I mean, is there people coming in the door and then leaving like a month later not being able to handle it? Or is it pretty, you know, the turnover rate pretty low?
Well, the two centers that I managed were both family planning centers. We didn't do abortions, although we were paid to work in abortion facilities and help out. But for the staff, that was optional. So we would have turnover just in the fact that, you know, it's kind of a tough place to work. And, you know, parents will find birth control pills and call and be very angry, and the staff really has to take quite a bit of that, you know, angry parents calling. And so there is really quite a high turnover. I remember when we got our brand new 4D state-of-the-art little fancy GE ultrasound machines that really showed the humanity of an unborn child. And there were women that had worked in the abortion facility for years and really kind of bought into the lie that, you know, it's not a life, it's not human, you know, all the things that they say. And once they saw those, you could see little tiny fingerprints on, you know, wee little fetuses. There were women that just laid the wand down and walked out because they were like, wow, you know, they saw the actual truth of what they were doing.
Now, in terms of the ultimate split that you had with Planned Parenthood, how did that come about? Was it basically you felt, were you forced out, or was this kind of like a conversion, like, hey, you know, I'm starting to see things clearly here, I can't be a part of it? And then you know, maybe looking back on that, is there anything good that you can take out of that kind of an experience now to where you can apply it today and maybe help other women?
Well, there were several instances, several issues that really led up to my departure, but one of the big ones was when Planned Parenthood of Iowa, of Greater Iowa, began doing something called webcam abortion. And I don't know, you know, if your readers are familiar with that or not, but it's basically a chemical or a medication abortion done via a Skype-like connection.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's no doctor in the building. Their plan was to have one doctor in Des Moines that could serve all the 17 outlying centers, so whenever a woman came into any Planned Parenthood in Iowa, they could get their 3-minute urine pregnancy test. A non-medical, untrained staff like myself would do a vaginal ultrasound, which is an invasive procedure, should be done by someone with the credentials to do that. But then that image would be scanned to the physician in Des Moines, and she would determine if it was 70 days along or less. If it was, she could push a button on her computer that opens a drawer in the remote center, and then she watches over the computer connection while the woman takes the first set of pills, which are the ones that block hormones to the baby and the baby dies. Then the woman takes the next set of pills home, takes those by herself at home, and then completes the abortion there. They made the announcement that they would be doing these webcam abortions all across Iowa. I was mortified that they would be doing them in rural centers. I asked if they were going to notify the doctors in the communities where they were going to be doing them, and they said no, and we were sworn to secrecy. They didn't want anybody to know that they were going on until they'd established a standard of care and done at least 500, preferably 1,000, before anybody knew about it. So I really knew that this was bad. Of course, Iowa has no waiting period for women seeking an abortion. So a woman could come in, find out that her pregnancy test was positive. The staff would say, we can take care of that problem for you today, 45 minutes in and out. All you have to do is take these pills and make kind of a knee-jerk decision. Let's do it, take the pills, and then leave without really any thought as to what she was doing. So it was a bad deal all the way around. You know, I remember asking my boss, don't you have to have like a bachelor's degree to do a transvaginal ultrasound? And he said, Sue, if you are breathing, you can do this. It helps if you've played a video game because it's a lot like running a joystick.
Unbelievable.
Uh-huh. And I remember thinking, oh, my. So that was really the point that, I mean, there were several other things that led up to that. But I remember thinking that I was not going to be a part of that, and began being more and more vocal. And actually discovered Christian radio at that time, ended up bringing a radio into the clinic. So I was listening to, you know, Christian radio while I was at Planned Parenthood. And it was there that I first learned about Iowa Right to Life. And I heard an interview from the station manager and the head of Iowa Right to Life talking about abortions. And I thought, you know, they really need to know that these webcam abortions are being done. So right then and there, from inside Planned Parenthood, I called Iowa Right to Life and shared with them what a webcam abortion was. And I just felt like somebody needed to know. I couldn't imagine that it was legal. When I questioned the legality of it with upper management at Planned Parenthood, you know, they said, all of our I's are dotted, our T's are crossed, nothing will stop us. You know, it's our desire to make this the first in the nation, a protocol that's available to all family planning clinics across the country, thereby promoting abortion on every street corner. Because they don't need to have surgical staff, they don't need to travel during Iowa winters, you know, there's no support staff, no crash cart, none of the equipment. All they really need is an ultrasound machine and, you know, the webcam and fiber optics, and that was all provided by a donor. So they really had no investment into it. It was very low cost to provide those. And they charged the same for a webcam abortion as they did a surgical abortion.
Wow, absolutely astonishing. You know, we live in kind of a fast food society where, you know, we could go and get a hamburger and in 30 seconds. We're always looking for things to happen very quickly. And now with this whole webcam abortion, something I'm truly not overly knowledgeable about, we have kind of a drive-through death situation. I mean, you go in, and it seems like you get this done in about 15 minutes or so. That's quite frightening, you know, just the whole process. Now, how widespread is this? Was this just relegated to Iowa? Are there other demographic areas trying this out? I mean, again, this is new to me. I really didn't know this particular aspect of the culture of death. Maybe you could break that down a little bit for us.
Well, sure. When I worked there at the end of 2008, it was they ran only Iowa. Planned Parenthood of the Heartland eventually took over Nebraska, Arkansas, Oklahoma, you know, so they had quite a big area. And their plan was really to provide these abortions everywhere. And Planned Parenthood Federation of America was all in. I mean, the local clinic, the local affiliate got awards for, you know, their innovative ideas on how to provide abortions, because less and less doctors willing to, you know, to do surgical abortions and travel. And so this was a great way for one doctor to basically wait at her computer and push a button, and she could do many, many abortions over the course of the day. So their plan, like I said, was to market it, but thankfully, because the word got out about that, many states, 16 or 18 now, have really banned webcam abortion proactively without having it start there. So that's the good news. It's banned in several states, but Iowa continues to do it to this day. Minnesota does it, and unfortunately, Maine, the state of Maine, just opened, I think, 17 new webcam abortion centers all across the state. So once they open, it's really hard to pass the legislation to get them out. It's, you know, it's much better to be able to educate people about this is what this is. And you know, I was able to speak in Arkansas one time to a Senate subcommittee, and one of the senior senators there said, oh, this will never happen here. We'll never let it out of committee. And I remember saying, sir, with all due respect, Planned Parenthood doesn't ask permission. You know, they start doing these over the desk to a woman that just found out she's pregnant. You know, she's in shock. It's an easy out. It's a great marketing tool for Planned Parenthood to be able to say, no problem. All you have to do is take these pills and the problem goes away. And, you know, without any, you know, thought really as to what they're doing. And we would have women come back in after taking the pills at another center. They would come back in, you know, to my center and say, I can't believe I did that. Is there anything I can do to reverse it? Well, at that time, there was nothing. Once you took those pills, your baby was a goner. But now there actually are, you know, it's not always successful, but there are doctors who will see you and try to do a reversal of that. So it has come a long ways, but it's really very insidious. It's secretive. You know, Planned Parenthood doesn't take out a billboard ad and say, guess what, we're doing this new kind of abortion and this is how it works. They don't do that, you know. So
interesting. Yeah, you know, from scripture, woe unto you, call evil good. And there was an article, I don't know if you saw this, this came out in the mainstream news, Susan, where religious, quote unquote, religious leaders came to gather in Washington, D.C., and they blessed, quote unquote, the opening of a new Planned Parenthood abortion clinic. And the leader of it, I think her name was Dr. Lawyer Myers, said that this is sacred work. This is a direct quote in almost every message to our staff. I talk about our doing sacred work. This confirms the sacredness of the work that we do, you know, an implication of all these religious, quote unquote, religious leaders coming together. I mean, this is just the madness of what we're now steeped in. My question for you is talking about the big business aspect of Planned Parenthood, and I firmly believe that it's connected to organ harvesting. You know, maybe talk a little bit about profits over people, profit centers, you know, what you have come to the realization of this Medicaid fraud scam basically being run from the inside. Maybe break that down for a little bit for us.
Okay, well, let me back up just a second there, Eric. Sure. When you were talking about the quote religious leaders, you know, blessing Planned Parenthood, Planned Parenthood has a really interesting way of helping their staff feel like what they do is indeed sacred work. And I remember, you know, managing the two centers that I had, getting letters from, well, pastors, clergy, you know, fringe churches, basically, that would write us letters and say, you know, bless this place and the sacred work done here. And, you know, it would make us feel good about what we did there. And we would actually, you know, frame those and hang them up thinking, see, you know, what we do here is good. We are helping women. But that's one way that the enemy, you know, tries to make us feel like, well, we can rationalize this away, you know. Right. But if you have to rationalize it or justify it in some way, you better reevaluate, you know, what you're doing. But having religious leaders come and bless a Planned Parenthood just really fits in with their mentality. And of course they are religious leaders and not really people of faith, so that's the difference. But on to your next question about just the business model for Planned Parenthood, I guess I would say is really money above all else. Their bottom line is huge for them. They love the webcam abortion idea because it put them, you know, on the cutting edge of this incredible thing. And when RU486 came out years ago, Planned Parenthood in Iowa was one of the affiliates, the Planned Parenthood affiliate that did the study on that. And so they were on the cutting edge of that, and, you know, they love that, and they love the notoriety of it. But really, so there's two things, really, that part, the notoriety and the cutting edge stuff, the first in the nation, but also how does it affect our bottom line. And managers all across the affiliate would be charged with meeting goal. And there would be goals for number of birth control pills given, number of pregnancy tests, number of everything that they did there. And of course, one of the services was abortions. And if your facility didn't perform abortions yet, you had a goal for how many people you referred for abortion. And if you hit the goal, your line for that was green. If you were 5% under, it was yellow, and if you were 10% under, it was red, and you had to have a corrective action plan for why you didn't hit goal and how you would fix that for the next month. Right. So, you know, they talk about...
Sounds like,
you know,
retail.
It is. It's basically retail. It's not even healthcare. You know, it's selling their product, but as a manager, there was a lot of pressure always to hit that goal, you know, no matter the cost, and figuring out, how can we make it this month if we're short here, you know, whatever, kind of creative financing, so to speak, so we would hit the goal and our bottom line would be black. So
Yeah, unbelievable. I shudder to think, you know, these people standing before our Lord unrepentant of the sin, it's not going to be a good day for them. Now, how do you respond to someone who's, you know, either pro-choice or still in Planned Parenthood who comes to you with the argument that, yes, you know, Susan, this is all about protecting women's health. How do you refute such an argument?
Well, one of my favorite things is, you know, talking about the humanity of an unborn baby. And we know from science, you know, that there's a heartbeat 18, 19, 20 days, somewhere in there. And so even if someone, you know, that I'm, I don't want to say arguing with, but visiting with, is saying, well, I don't believe in God, and, you know, because I always like to say, you know, the commandments tell us not to kill. And we know that when we take the life of an unborn baby, it is indeed murder, because I've seen it myself. And, you know, they might say, well, I don't believe in God, da, da, da. So if you have to completely abandon that part of it and leave the Bible behind for this person and go to the scientific approach, the best thing, you know, I think to do is to try to find some common ground that you can agree on. You know, well, when does life begin? And some people honestly believe it doesn't begin until the baby is born and they take their first breath. That until that, it's not, you know, it's not human. Other people, you know, it may be earlier. It's when viability begins, or, you know, when they hit second trimester, or, you know, I'm a when the sperm meets the egg, there is unique DNA like has never been on Earth before or never will be again, and God created that, and that is life. And what is the definition of life? The definition is it changing? Is it growing? And we know from the moment the sperm and the egg meet, it's constantly dividing and changing and growing. And it frustrates me to no end to think that if scientists found a one cell on another planet or a star or the moon, they would declare that there was life there. But an entire 20-week unborn baby with fingernails and eyelashes and sucking his thumb is not considered human. And indeed, Eric, I think one day we will be responsible for that. And, you know, whether we've been in the abortion industry or not, we've all had a part in it. And if we're silent, we're a part of the problem. And so I like to think that I'm trying to afflict the comfortable. And if, you know, if you go to bed at night without praying about, Lord, what is my part in this? What can I do? Can I host a Bible study or a movie night or write some letters or write to the editor? What can I do? You know, I think if you go to bed without thinking about that, that you really are part of the problem.
Yeah. There's no question about it. And our hope and intent with this, of course, is to get this information out. But hopefully more and more employees will leave Planned Parenthood and do exactly what Susan is doing. I mean, certainly courageous on your part. I truly commend you on that level. And again, we would just argue as Catholics, I mean, it's a part of, you know, the reason why we need to return to church teaching. We now live, you know, in a society where we don't follow what the church teaches, and especially on life. Whereas we know that life begins at conception, and now it's just like anything goes. And we know from our perspective that error has no public rights, and that's what's being granted now is, you know, errors being granted rights in this country across the board. It doesn't just extend into this one area. And ultimately, we're going to suffer the consequences from the hand of God. You know, I guess my next question for you is, you know, over the past years, is there one encounter, you know, one story that stands out in your mind that has so impressed you that you know, constantly talk about, you know, it could be positively or negatively, that's just impressed you so much that you constantly are regurgitating a certain story maybe to prove certain points that you have. I mean, I would imagine you've met so many people and just so many experiences that maybe there's just one that stands out to you.
Well, there's, over those years, you know, many things happened, and an interesting part of being a manager at a Planned Parenthood facility, especially in a small town. I live in a town of 10,000 people, Storm Lake, Iowa. I lived here all my life. I know everybody. But working there, you know, all those years and seeing all those women come through, and they might have been 45 years old and pregnant, and their husband had a vasectomy, and they said, I can't have an abortion. It might have been a 14-year-old girl that was raped by her big brother. I mean, everything in between that you can imagine. And, you know, it was my job, really, to get them into an abortion facility. So before they would leave, my place, I would try to have an appointment set for them, have the paperwork filled out, make them feel at home with where they were going and what time and all of that, so that we would know that they follow through. So having done that for almost 18 years, I've had the unique opportunity living in this small town since I left there in December of 2008, having many, many women approach me and say, "Do you remember me?" And I've worked so hard to try to forget the faces and the situations, really. But a woman will come up and say, you know, "Do you remember me? I had an abortion. You helped me get it. I hate myself every day. I regret it." You know, she may be crying. I may shed a tear with her. That happens not frequently, but it's happened many times in those years. And you know, the flip side of that is I'll have a woman come up to me and say, you know, "Do you remember me? I almost had an abortion. Here's my child. I'm so thankful that I didn't." Those are the two scenarios I get. But, you know, I've never, ever had somebody come up to me and say, "Well, I came into Planned Parenthood. I talked to you. I almost had an abortion. I didn't. Here's my child, but I really wish I would have aborted him." You know, I've never had anybody that chose life that has come back to me and said, "I made the wrong decision." But I've had countless women come up to me and say, "I had an abortion and I regret it every day." So I think if I had to pick one thing, that would probably be the one that sticks with me the most, is that women do regret their abortions. And yeah. I mean, it's hard for me to think of how many I went to a healing retreat with Father Frank Pavone at one point, and we talked about how many did we have a hand in, and I mean, that's a hard thing to even think about.
Yeah.
But you know, and then There Were None is another great ministry for people that are in Planned Parenthood or coming out. And you know, when you get out of there, it's hard because the pay is great, the benefits are good. You know, a lot of women that work there aren't highly educated and they don't have a lot of options. You know, I don't have a college diploma and I made great money there and had wonderful benefits. And so when you come out of there, you know, I'm a single mom, it's kind of scary, but having a place like And Then There Were None is kind of a safety net, really. You can call them and say, you know, "Do you have any thoughts on jobs in Cincinnati or, you know, wherever you are?" And they're well connected and have a lot of resources. So there, you know, there are options for people that are still in there and want to get out. And it's just invaluable to know that there's somebody that can come alongside you and help.
Yeah, that's an area often overlooked. I mean, we see all these support networks for those, you know, maybe young teens who are pregnant, those who've had an abortion, for those who actually, you know, were former employees of Planned Parenthood. That's something we don't think about. And just all of, I would think the trauma, you know, especially if you have a conversion and you now see that what you were doing was evil. I mean, there should be a good support network involved. So I'm glad to hear that is transpiring. My final question to you today, Susan, is this. You know, could you assess where we're at right now in the pro-life movement? You know, is it gaining ground? You know, maybe talk about some areas of opportunity that you see since you're so heavily involved. But then also, you know, with the election of Trump, obviously we averted, you know, Clinton, so to speak, you know, openly pro-choice. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit and how that will affect America going forward.
Well, certainly we live in interesting times. There is no doubt about that. It's just fascinating to watch how things are unfolding and really how it equates with, you know, biblical prophecy. But I can't help but think that God has really given America a second chance. And, you know, through the elections and the widely huge success of pro-life people all across the country, governors, senators, states, I mean, all the way up to the White House. But I think a lot of people are of the mind that, you know, pro-life won, the Republicans won, you know, we're in good shape now, we don't have to worry about it or think about it. But the battle really is yet to come. And the pro-choice, the pro-abortion people will not go down silently. You know, there's going to be a lot of battles that are hard fought, but it's important for us as the church to support our elected officials and really come alongside them, write to them. You know, in this day and age, it is so easy to shoot an email to your U.S. senator and say, hey, thanks for voting for that bill. I know you're solidly pro-life, but it doesn't go unnoticed. And I mean, it takes 10 minutes of your day or less, and it's a huge boost to that, you know, to that representative. So it's really important for us to do that. And I think, you know, social media, we just need to keep this at the forefront. Talk to your priest, your pastor, you know, whoever it is, about, can you spend 1 minute from the pulpit? This was a Chuck Colson idea, but 1 minute every Sunday from the pulpit talking about pro-life. Because if the church would really rise up, you know, we could get this done this year. And I think really put an end to this. People are just starting to realize, you know, the evil behind Planned Parenthood. And so many people will say to me, well, where are all these women going to go if Planned Parenthood goes under? Well, the important thing about that to remember is that federally qualified health centers outnumber Planned Parenthood's 20 to 1. We have 213 federally qualified health centers in Iowa alone. And these are places that provide comprehensive health care. It's given by physicians, nurses, nurse practitioners, unlike Planned Parenthood, where a lot of the care is given by entry-level staff like myself, you know. They're on a sliding fee scale, just like a Planned Parenthood. So there's lots of options. And if we can figure out how to reroute the Planned Parenthood money to those federally qualified health centers and then come alongside women that need that care and get them where they need to go, Planned Parenthood is going to be a memory as distant as the Holocaust. And it's going to be right there with just the evil of the Holocaust, because, you know, we're approaching 60 million deaths since Roe v. Wade, and it's just unthinkable.
Yeah, truly, I echo your sentiments. We have to not only pray for leaders, pray for good leaders, of course, for this country and just the church, no doubt about it. And Sue, I really appreciate you coming on today and providing us, you know, your analysis, your insights. You were on the inside, now you're able to come out, and hopefully this will encourage a whole lot of other people now to come out and realize, listen, you're going to be held accountable for your decisions. Just as Sue mentioned, even silence will be sin. Our Lord one day will ask, you know, even though you might have thought it was bad, so to speak, at the time, you know, why didn't you openly expose this? Why didn't you come out publicly? Why did you still keep employment with essentially, let's just call it what it is, a center of death? That's what it is. Forget about profit center for a section, a second. You know, it truly is a center of death. And so I appreciate you coming on, Sue. What I'd like to do in the last few minutes here is just provide my guests, you know, an area of opportunity to get out their social media, maybe some projects they're working on, media appearances, and then I'll kind of close it out with some closing thoughts. Can you hear me, Sue?
Oh, I'm sorry. You wanted me to answer that? I thought you were going to talk about what you're doing. Or you want me to talk about what I'm doing?
Oh, no, yeah. On your
end. Oh, okay. Sorry about
that's
that.
Okay.
Well, I'm actually headed to the March for Life in D.C.
Okay, good.
Next week. And, of course, I've had the opportunity to be there before, but it's a wonderful, amazing time of, you know, 400,000 or 500,000 people coming together. I'd say the average age there is about 25. I'm like a dinosaur walking around. It's so energizing because there's so many young people and they're all there for one thing. But I remember a couple of years ago being there and they estimated 500,000 people there, and it got like a 30-second spot on the mainstream media that night.
Okay.
But then the next day there was like 25 people gathered on the steps of the Supreme Court about gun control, and that got like a 5-minute segment. You know, so. But it's still worth going because we're representing life, we're representing babies, and you know, Planned Parenthood talks about the war on women, but the real war is on our littlest women, you know, the babies that are in the womb and the little boys that are in the womb. And so it's just really our job to stand in the gap, speak up no matter the cost, and be bold about it. I mean, God did not give us a spirit of timidity. We're not supposed to be shy and quiet and afraid that we're going to hurt somebody's feelings. We're supposed to speak up and be loud and kind, but you know, loud. And one of the things you said, Eric, was about the workers in Planned Parenthood. And if you have an opportunity to go and pray outside an abortion facility, it is the most powerful thing you can ever do. because you bless the people going by, the women going in, the staff, and yourself. And no matter how far away the nearest abortion facility is, it is worth the drive because, you know, it's an experience like no other. And the more you go, the more comfortable you get. And women will actually, you know, feel your love and the presence of Jesus there. And so it's such a powerful experience, and it does change lives, and it saves babies, and it saves the souls of those who are working there. So the people that work in Planned Parenthood, sometimes we tend to, you know, demonize them and think, oh, they're just so terrible. And they're people made in God's image that are blinded to the truth, and they need love and prayers more than anything. And I think most of the people that come out of Planned Parenthood wouldn't make it out if there wasn't kind people there to help them, you know. So yeah. Anyway, it's worth it.
Yeah, no question about it. We have to unite, stay on the forefront in this war against the culture of death. Pray to end abortion, folks. Listen, you know, we talk about it often here on this website. It's in every area and every facet of our society. It's not truly just in this particular area. And as it relates to this area, though, certainly liberalism, feminism equates into this pro-death position. But also, as Susan mentioned, it's fear. You know, especially with the younger females going into these abortions. I mean, it's just fear. They feel like they have no support. How are they going to raise this kid? And that's where we come in. This is great opportunities for works of mercy. As Susan mentioned, there's a great one for my alma mater out here in the Ohio Valley. They go out, if I'm not mistaken, still to the Pittsburgh clinic, and for my alma mater, Franciscan, and they do it on a weekly basis, at least on a consistent basis. So that's the battle we're in, folks. Light versus darkness, truth versus error, God versus Satan, ultimately. And, you know, there is no middle ground on this position for sure. And we appreciate Susan coming on today. Again, make sure you subscribe to Tradcat Night. Make sure you click that notification button. I'll do my best to continue to get on guests. Exposing Planned Parenthood, exposing the culture of death, as we do here at Tradcat Night. And I just want to thank you all for the prayers and support that you've given over the past 3 years. And I look forward to continually to serve you and the church. And until next time, my good friends, stay safe and God bless.